Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album? Or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers? Or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports.
Come on, let's get going now.
Welcome to the Graybar Sports Open Line.
Wynn swings and he drives that to left field. Back to the track and gone!
Graybar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs.
We're primed and ready.
All day, baby.
Man, let's go.
Now, Matt Pauly and the Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Here we go on a Wednesday night. Man, oh man, oh man, do we have a packed show for you this evening, taking you till 8 o'clock. We got a bunch of guests tonight. We got some really good guests coming up on the program. Bernie Miklas is going to join us in about 10 minutes later on this hour. Former Rams and Hall of Fame wide receiver Isaac Bruce is going to be with us as we talk through the 25th anniversary of the greatest show on turf. Next hour, we're going to try to break down everything that's going on with the Blues, with Luke Korak, and also what a win it was last night for SLU basketball. They pick up a huge win against VCU, and with that, Gibson Jimerson, who just goes off last night, he's going to be with us as well. So we've got a jam-packed program. As always, if you would like to chat with us about anything that we are chatting about, you can call, you can text, you can tweet, and you can leave us a voice message. If you call or text, the phone number, 314-436-7900. 314-436-7900. If you want to tweet at me, you find me on Twitter at Matt Pauly on air, MattPauley on air, or you can leave us a voice message if you happen to be listening via the Odyssey app. All right, let's start with, I think, the biggest news of the day, and that's the good fortune that just fell into the hands of the St. Louis Blues organization. What happened today with the Blues doesn't generally happen. But man, oh man, did they luck out. Because this time yesterday, what were we talking about? We were talking about the fact that Brandon Saad, he was being placed on waivers, that he was likely to clear through waivers, and that the Blues would then be assigning him to their top affiliate, their AHL affiliate in Springfield, where he would be a very highly paid minor league hockey player. Well, not so fast. Everything happens the way it was supposed to happen until you get to the point of him headed to Springfield, and that's not going to happen. In fact, not only is it not going to happen, Brandon Saad's no longer a member of the Blues organization, and in many ways, from a cap standpoint, the Blues just got themselves a financial windfall. So Saad had no interest, evidently, in going and playing minor league hockey. He's been in the NHL for a long time. He's been a fairly high-level NHL player. Going and playing in minor league rinks, in minor league locker rooms, on minor league buses, like that wasn't something that was on his to-do list. So the Blues and Saad, he got placed after being placed on waivers yesterday. He got placed on unconditional waivers today for the purpose of contract termination. Contract termination can happen when each side is okay with it. And each side was okay with this. So with the contract termination, he loses more than $5 million. $5 million over the next couple of years coming his way just goes away. He'll make up some of that with whatever team he signs with moving forward. He'll get an opportunity with another NHL team for sure. But he's not going to get an opportunity where he's going to make better than $5 million over the next couple years. More importantly, the Blues are now going to save his entire $4.5 million cap hit for this year, but more so for next year. The Blues are, like most teams in the NHL, the Blues are capped out. and they just don't have a whole lot of space to do much of anything with. And it is what has partially led to where this team is at in just kind of being in the middle, just being in an area where they don't have a superstar. They try to make some shrewd decisions to create some depth on the roster, but they're just not really adding at the high level. Not that saving $4.5 million against the cap is going to really change that in a major way, but it changes it in a minor way. It changes it in a way that you've got some more money sitting there and available to you. And more than anything else, you're out from a bad contract. That's not supposed to happen in sports, by the way. In sports, if you sign a bad contract, you just have to live with it. That's part of the sport. That's part of the cost and the risk and the gamble of being a decision maker, whether you're a general manager or a president of baseball operations, whoever is the final decision maker on rosters and contracts and things like that. Part of the gamble of that job is handing out multi-year deals. And some of these deals the Blues have handed out have not aged well. They're not alone in that. Most teams sign some bad contracts at some point. But for one of these bad contracts that they had from a guy who just was not performing this year, and that's the case with Saad. He just wasn't performing this year at all. Had only 16 points in 43 games. You get out from that contract. You know, he had originally signed a five-year deal at $22.5 million. One more year was on his contract. And he's been a solid Blue. 274 games, 74 goals, 144 points. Like, this is not trying to take anything away from him on his entire tenure. But he's been bad this year. He's been bad. And he was bad enough that a guy making that kind of money was going to be sent to the minors. And he makes the decision that, nah, I'm good. I don't need that money. I'll move on to somewhere else. I'll make a little less money, but I'll stay in the NHL. And I do wonder, like, how many NHL guys make that decision? Because it's what you value, right? And that's whether you're a professional athlete or, you know, whatever you do for a living, decisions that you make are motivated by what you value. And he obviously values being in the NHL more than he values making the most amount of money that he can possibly make the rest of the way. There's a lot of guys out there that say, I'm not giving a penny back. Send me to Springfield. Send me to the AHL. I will put that Thunderbird on my chest, and I'll do my thing, and I'll make my money. But some guys would just say, you know what? I'm good. I've made a lot of money in my career. I'll make some of this back. I've got the opportunity to have a good second half of the season or a good final, third of the season, and maybe try to get an opportunity for a better deal next year. I just need a change of scenery. Like, that's what he's doing. I respect that. I do. Not that I disrespect somebody who doesn't make that decision, because Lord knows if I've got that kind of money headed my way, I'm probably going to the minor leagues. that's probably where I would go with this thing. And I think, I don't know, it would be interesting if you could just find out, if you could run that hypothetical situation by players and see which ones would choose to give the money back and which ones would choose to play in the minor leagues. He doesn't want to be a minor league hockey player. He made that choice. Blues are fine with that. They get out from underneath the contract, and here we are. Lou Korak will join us coming up next hour in about an hour. At about 7:20 is when Lou is scheduled to join us. Up next, Bernie Miklas. After that, Isaac Bruce. Don't go anywhere. We've got a jam-packed Graybar Sports Open Line. The big dog, Bernie Miklas, with us next here on KMOX. It's a Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. We've got so much going on tonight. Isaac Bruce is going to join us in 10, 15 minutes or so. Next hour, Gibson Jimerson after the big SLU win. Lou Korak's going to talk Blues hockey. But right now, we're very happy to welcome on one of our favorite people out there. You hear him all the time here on KMOX. Our conversation is being brought to you by Saliga Heating and Cooling. He is the host of the Bernie Show on Twitter. Find it at the Bernie Show. Not Twitter. Well, it is on Twitter, but on YouTube is what I mean to say. He's Bernie Miklas. Bernie. I'll get you on so I can stop stumbling over all my words. How are you?
No, you're doing good, man. Hey, you mentioned Isaac Bruce, and I thought of the Hall of Pro Football Hall of Fame. I just wanted to throw something out there. I've been doing some intel work on this. I think Torrey Holt's got his best shot by far to get in this year. You know, I'm hearing good things. So I hope that that's the case because he's waited long enough. But I think he's next in line. I think there's a really good chance that the voting body will get behind him. They've already voted, but it won't be announced until later. But I don't know the vote for sure, but I just hear good things.
Okay, that's good to know. And I think everybody's rooting for him to get in. The Blues received a gift today. They got out from underneath a really bad contract for this year and next year. I mean, nothing better could have happened to the Blues than what happened today with Brandon Saad saying, I'd rather give back $5 million than play in the minor leagues.
How about that? I mean, I'm sitting there and I honestly thought, well, wait a minute. Did this really happen, or was someone saying it might happen, or is there a chance it would happen? Yeah, I mean, I'm sure they were. I don't know how Doug Armstrong and the Blues celebrate behind closed doors at the offices down there, but I don't know if this would have been a reason to have raise a glass of champagne. But maybe they did some kind of awkward dance in celebration. Yeah, it's a real gift. You wrapped it up perfectly with that one word, a gift.
Yeah,
that's two words.
I get it. Like, you're in the NHL for a really long time. The last thing you want to do is play in minor league arenas and get on minor league buses and be in minor league locker rooms. Like, I understand all that. But $5 million is $5 million, and he'll get a job somewhere, but he's leaving a whole lot of money on the table.
Well, that's right. And listen, I don't want to pile on this guy because I was happy that he was a Blue for quite a while, but he was really awful this year, and he wasn't getting any better. And he had that one hat trick and you got some hope there. And then he pretty much receded again after that. So, I mean, the Blues made the right move in releasing him or waiving him. But I don't think they expected for him to hand the money back. You know, so that's pretty must have a lot of confidence that he's going to get a good deal somewhere else.
How much frustration is there in this organization right now that even with Jim Montgomery coming in and even with it looking better, I'm not running away from the fact that the team has played better under him. Some of the underlying issues that have been around since Craig Berube and Drew Bannister, the comments we hear after games about not getting off to a fast enough start, not having enough energy, like these things are still here and they seemingly cannot get fixed.
It's a recurring nightmare, and I was looking at I made a list, and I'm glad you asked me this. I made a list the other day, like which players, and I'm not talking about fringe guys, which core players have been a member of the Blues for all three coaches. You know, we're talking about Craig Berube, we're talking about Drew Bannister, we're talking about, of course, our coach now. The list is, well, the two goaltenders, then it's in no particular order. It's Justin Falk, Colt Parayko, Pavel Buchnevich, Jordan Kyrou, Jake Neighbors, Brandon Saad, who's now gone, Shen, and Robert Thomas. Also, Toropchenko and a couple of other guys. But that's your core. That's the core that's been in place for all three of these coaches. So I really think – I'm not saying they're the only people to blame, but I think you have to look at your core. You have to wonder what the issue is there, because these are the guys, given their seniority on the team and the fact that they've been through a lot, they're the guys that have to take ownership of this situation. They're the guys who need to emerge as leaders. Braden Shen, I've never thought, was going to be a great leader in the traditional sense. He's trying his best. He really is. But there is a collective lack of leadership in the house there as far as the players. And the first place I look, as I just said, is to the guys that have been here under all three coaches, the last three coaches.
How does this team fix that, even with the gifts that they were given of an extra $4.5 million against the cap going into next season? It still doesn't feel like that they're going to be able to go out and do what they need to do to have a massive change on this roster.
It's going to be tough. The thing of it is, you know, Doug Armstrong's going to have to make some really hard decisions because he's been doing a retool. He's not given no indication he's going to tear the whole thing down and start all over again. But that said, hypothetically, If you think you could get a bundle for, say, Jordan Kyrou, would you think about doing that? Would you think about – way back when, you know, the Blues traded TJ Oshie off of a young nucleus that wasn't making any progress and they wanted to shake it up, and they shook it up by trading TJ Oshie. So my point is, that's a pretty big name player. It's been done before by many teams, and it's been done by the Blues before. Maybe you take a guy like that who's an example, and you just say, no, you're not working hard enough. You're not developing. You're taking everything for granted. We're going to get you out of here. I'm using that as a hypothetical. I think it would actually take a dramatic move like that. And I think it, furthermore, if there's a way to make a trade that would involve multiple players, I mean, where you send two players to someone else for three players or whatever, just change the mix. And I think Jim Montgomery will have a lot to say about this, because he wants to play a certain style. He wants this team to get faster and more, that have more energy that comes with playing fast. And I think that he'll work very closely with Doug Armstrong, and they're going to try to find out the best way forward beyond this season.
If they want to play fast, shouldn't Jordan Kyrou be doing more? He's the fastest guy there.
And absolutely. He's an enigma, let's be honest. He just is. And there's, you know, I've been disappointed in Robert Thomas too, because he's really good for stretches, and then all of a sudden he kind of fades out. He's on the ice for a lot of goals. You know, some people you don't expect much from. Like, I don't expect a lot from Justin Falk. I think Parayko's doing as well as he can. He's not a leader type. I'm fine with the goaltenders. Shen was given a long-term contract that's looking worse by the season. So in terms of moving players, I think you have to go with your most talented players just to see what you can get for them. You have to put them out there on the market and let it be known that they're available.
Maybe I'll miss a guy on this, but just off the top of my head, I think the only players who actually really carry value in trade discussions, like you could get something back for them, and even some of these guys, teams might be balking at how much they get paid. But for me, it's Binnington. I think you get a little something for Parayko. You get something for Kyrou and for Thomas. Outside of those four guys, Bernie, I don't know who else on that roster actually has a whole lot of value.
I think Buchnevich would, you know, and he signed a deal, and it wasn't an outrageous deal. He's got a long-term contract now, so they don't have to worry about him. I mean, he's a really, really good player. I'm not sure what's been up with him this year, but I think he's a really, really good player who for 90% of the time has competed really hard. But they, you know, they also screwed him up. Bannister screwed mm-hmm. him up by insisting that he was a center, and he's obviously not a center. So he had to kind of start all over again under Jim Montgomery. But I think Booch would, there'd be a market for him.
That's a really good point, too. It might take to next season to get him back going, just because he didn't get the opportunity to become who he was going to be this year because of everything the Bannister did with him in the middle.
You know, one other note, because I want to throw this one at you, see what you think of this. I think one of the problems the Cardinals have had in recent years, because we've seen all those outfielders come and go, they tend to overrate their own prospects, right?
Yeah.
And these prospects get a big buildup, and then they come here, and look, they may do some good things, but they aren't what the team hyped them up to be. I think the Blues are kind of in that spot too. Like, we're all looking at these young prospects that they have down below, and believe me, there's some exciting talent and all that. But you look at the Athletic, and I trust their prospect watcher. He's got the Blues as like the 14th best prospect pool in the National Hockey League. And my point being, are the Blues kind of doing the same thing that the Cardinals did? You know, where you're just blowing up way too much how great your prospects mm-hmm. are, and they don't live up. They won't live up to it. Much like Tyler O'Neill, Dylan Carlson, and some others that came through St. Louis.
Probably, although the one area I would push back on at least is maybe they don't have the high level prospects that they want, but number of prospects. You look at the fact that they'd, you know, so many guys in the World Juniors and things. That's a tangible number you can at least look at.
No, they have some people that have accomplishments and I think improve their stock, but I do wonder about high end. I mean, I think the Blues really to really turn the corner, they need more high end talent. And how long will it take some of their young prospects, when they get to the National Hockey League, how long will it take them to develop into that kind of player? I don't know. I mean, it's sort of an open-ended question. There is talent, but how do we rate that talent? And what is going to be the ceiling of that talent.
Before I let you go, Bernie, what a win last night for the Billikens as they try to establish themselves at the top of the A-10.
I love the way they – I watched that game. I loved it. I love the way they played defense. I mean, this is last night, you know, St. Louis, you couldn't hit many three-pointers, and there were some things going wrong. But whenever they reached a tough spot in that game, their defense was outstanding. And I think that's something that they're going to have to repeat against, you know, against their A-10 opponents. But, you know, we view Josh Schertz as kind of an offensive guy, and he's, you know, clever sets and things that he does and the way players play without the ball and all the motion and everything else. But he's been pounding it into them how they have to get physical and play defense. And you saw the result of that initiative last night. I was really inspired by that.
Great stuff from Bernie Miklas. Bernie, before we let you go, and coming up in just a moment, we'll remind folks that Isaac Bruce is going to join us. But Bernie, we always love being able to hear a little bit about Saliga Heating and Cooling.
Absolutely, man. The Miklas family been calling Saliga Heating and Cooling for, you know, 15, 16 years. It is a family business since 1927, continuously owned by the Saligas. And they've been serving generations of St. Louis families. Listen, I'll cut right to the chase here. They opened in 1927, and they're still going strong. They're getting bigger and better. They're growing. More clients, more families call them. You're not going to last all years, almost 100 years, unless you were great at what you do, unless you got 100% faith in your trustworthiness and honesty. And unless you were really, really good. I mean, the top of the line in terms of your professionalism. So they can do a lot for you. Check out the Priority Club. It's a maintenance program, and it is absolutely worth every nickel. We are in it, so I'm only speaking from our experience. They also have that top of the line American Standard heating and air conditioning equipment. So look into the go to SaligaHeatingCooling.com. Take a look at the maintenance plan, the Priority Club, it is called. Financing options are available for anything at Saliga, subject to credit approval. The best thing to do is go to SaligaHeatingAndCooling.com. Thank you.
Welcome back in. A Graybar Sports Open Line rolls on here on KMOX. Maybe you're listening on KMOX.com, streaming it on the Odyssey app, listening back to it on the podcast, wherever you're listening in. We certainly appreciate you. It's hard for me to believe it's been 25 years since the greatest show on turf, since the Rams won the Super Bowl against the Tennessee Titans, but indeed 25 years. We all remember that 73-yard touchdown pass to Isaac Bruce that Kurt Warner threw, and that ends up being the one of the two decisive plays, I guess you can say, in that game along with the tackle. Let's reminisce a little bit about the greatest show on turf, about the Super Bowl, and let's bring in former St. Louis Rams wide receiver and Pro Football Hall of Famer Isaac Bruce. Isaac, thanks so much for taking some time with us tonight.
Hey, I'm doing well, man. I appreciate you guys having us on, and appreciate you celebrating the 25th year anniversary, man. This is big for a lot of different reasons, a lot of fans, and the players as well. Thank you.
Yeah, you bet. Does it feel like it's been 25 years?
Some days it does, and other days it doesn't. I mean, it was a great run. The memories are still very fresh in our thinking, and we had a chance to celebrate earlier this season with the St. Louis Cardinals, who were so gracious to bring me and my teammates into town so that we can have a true celebration in St. Louis. And, you know, when we get together, it's all fun and games, and we get to reminisce about practices, plays, charter flights, and things of that nature. So it was a beautiful time.
Yeah, how much do you enjoy when everybody's able to get together? Because I remember that night when the Cardinals had you in, and it just seems like the camaraderie of all you guys is still there.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, we have lasting memories. There's only a handful of guys walking this planet that can, you know, can finish each other's sentences, each other's thoughts when it pertains to the greatest show on turf. And it's sweet. It's special. And we cherish those moments.
How often do you think about that? Obviously, you had a huge game, the touchdown, everything. Like, do you think about that game very often, or is it something that you generally only kind of think about it maybe when you're doing things like this or when you're around other people that are asking you about it?
Well, I say it's a combination of both. You know, there are thoughts that sometimes travel through my thinking when I see my teammates, when I see Torrey, I see Marshall, I see Big O, Kurt. We reminisce about it. And this time of year, you just can't help but see it because it was one of the greatest games ever played, Super Bowl 34. And always around Super Bowl season, you start to see highlights and you get opportunities to do interviews and just reminisce about your Super Bowl experiences. So they come up quite often.
Well, you had that big 73-yard touchdown reception, ends up being the game winner. When you think back on that, what's going through your mind as that play, as those 73 yards are playing out?
Well, I'd say a few things. Number one, to get in the end zone, you know, and try to shut the game down. But also, you know, just, you know, some of my childhood memories. I mean, whenever I thought about playing football and watching professional football, I was always a wide receiver catching a game-winning pass at a Super Bowl. You know, that moment came true for me. I mean, it was manifested before, you know, in front of 50 million people. I got an opportunity to enjoy it. and just really wishing at that moment that the game was over, that it was done. Unfortunately, it wasn't, and had to go on the sideline and sweat it out like everyone else.
Where were you at on the sideline when the tackle was made?
Yeah, I was away from the crowd, you know, in my normal spot. You know, one reason I didn't get near the crowd because, you know, you got defensive players who are on the field. They're actually doing their jobs. And the guys who play defense, they're lined up behind the coaching staff, the defense coordinators, the defensive assistants, just in case if their numbers get called, that they have to go into the game. It can get real congested, you know, in that area. And these guys are tall, you know, 6'6", 6'7", 6'5", and it's hard to see over these guys. So, you know, I always would remove myself from that crowd and go to the end of the opposite end of the field and kind of watch the game through the Jumbotron to the actual play on the field.
We're talking with former St. Louis Rams receiver, Hall of Famer, Isaac Bruce. When you think about the group of guys that Kurt had to throw to, yourself, Torrey Holt, Oz Kakim, Ricky Prohl, Marshall Faulk,
we have seen
offensive explosion in the NFL, but has there ever been a group of five people who could catch the football the way you guys had that year with that team?
You know what? I'd really have to go into my Rolodex and just think about what was happening with Doug Williams in Washington. You know, the Denver Broncos had a squad. And not only that, Dan Fouts and Kellen Winslow and those guys, they had a group of guys that really could do a lot of things on the football field. I think the unique thing about us is that, you know, we had probably at the receiver position, every guy could be a starter in the league. And we could take the top off of defense from myself to Oz to Tony Horn. We could just do it all. We could create great separation, which is everything that you needed to be a starter in the National Football League. And I think, you know, mentioning that, we're all very selfless. We didn't care who made the play or, you know, who made the big block. And we all held each other accountable. We celebrated each other's success. And we had the fortune of taking that group and those talents to a Super Bowl and winning it.
Speaking of celebrating success, one success that we're still really hoping for is that Torrey Holt, like you, gets selected for induction in the Hall of Fame. I think everybody agrees that he deserves it. How much are you rooting for the committee to go ahead and make that decision and get him into Canton?
I'm standing right there with Torrey. I mean, I was fortunate to see the day he walked through those doors in St. Louis to watching his last play in the National Football League and what a tremendous career. You know, a lot of people must realize that, you know, the group of guys that we played with, there was only one football. And to really carve out a place for yourself amongst that group, it took a lot of persistence. It took discipline. It took everything that Torrey Holt played with. So I think this is the year that the committee gets it right.
So, yeah, obviously the Rams left St. Louis, but so many former Rams from St. Louis continue to be engaged in the city. Folks like you, we see you back in town. What does the city mean to you? And kind of a weird situation where, you know, like you said, it was the Cardinals had honored the 25th anniversary because the team wasn't around. But it feels like you and so many other former Rams continue to be very committed to this city.
Well, I can speak for myself. I mean, you know, I arrived in St. Louis at the tender age of 22, and a lot of greats happened to me there in the city of St. Louis. So I consider St. Louis as a second home, you know, right after Fort Lauderdale, Florida. And I enjoy being there. I enjoy the fans. The fans were very knowledgeable. The fans made it tough for opposing teams to come in and execute offensively, defensively, and they knew football. And I felt like that we had a huge connection with the fan base. I mean, so much so that they, you know, they rode that wave with us all the way to the Super Bowl, the Super Bowls that we played in. And that's something that can never be taken away from St. Louis, from the players that played there, just those memories that we have there. I think there'll always be a place in St. Louis for that group of guys.
We're talking with Isaac Bruce. Before we get out of here, just want to mention the Isaac Bruce Foundation, because you continue to give back. Would encourage everybody listening to check out the website, isaacbruce.org. You do so many things, from football clinics to scholarships to literacy efforts, your Flight 300 program. I mean, there's so much that you do. Why has it become such a passion for you that in your post-playing career, you continue to give back in a really major way?
Well, thanks for mentioning the foundation. You know, Tiffany Burris, she does a great job hitting it. And, you know, it's just part of what we do as people. I won't just say professional athletes, because when it's time for the Isaac Bruce Foundation to have a gala, to have a football camp, to, you know, what we do as far as Flight 300 is concerned, there are a lot of people who don't get recognition who help us tremendously with those events. And I feel like as a citizen, we have a responsibility to respond to the needs of other citizens. So mm-hmm. I think the Isaac Bruce Foundation, we do a good job at that. Flight 300 is a program where we're flying students to school who can't afford an airline ticket or a bus ticket. So we stepped in there and we kind of bridged the gap to create, you know, some size of relief for people who normally just wouldn't have anything to be able to get to school.
Again, the website, isaacbruce.org. Make sure to check it out. So many wonderful things that Isaac is doing through his foundation. Isaac, thank you so much for taking some time. As somebody who was in attendance at that Super Bowl as a fan, it doesn't feel like it was 25 years ago. And I'm so grateful that I was able to experience that. I know St. Louis Rams fans were able to experience. So thank you for taking some time to reminisce about it just a bit.
Yes, sir. Thanks for having me.
The great Isaac Bruce joining us on the program, and we appreciate him taking his time. 25 years since that Super Bowl, and it's fun to think about for sure. Even with everything that has happened to football in St. Louis since then, it is fun to think about since then, and cool to be able to talk with Isaac Bruce about that for just a little while. All right, we will take a break. We'll come back. We'll wrap up hour number one of the program. Still need to get into what happened last night at Chaffetz Arena, both from a on-court perspective and also from a in-the-stands perspective. What a wild night. We'll talk about that a little bit coming up. It's a Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Back at it as we roll on, starting to wrap up this first hour of the program. Hour number two, jam-packed just as well. We'll talk with Luke Korak at 7:20. Get his thoughts on everything going on with the Blues, including the gift that they were given today of being able to get out from underneath the Brandon Saad contract. We are also going to hear from Gibson Jimerson at about 7:35 or so. We'll get his thoughts on what went down last night for the Billikens on the court and off the court. And we'll continue this conversation into the 7 o'clock hour after the 7 o'clock news. So if you have any thoughts on what went down last night, you can certainly send those in via Twitter, at Matt Pauley on air. Text them in at 314-436-7900, 314-436-7900. What an interesting night last night. But it got people talking. It got people, I mentioned this, that you know, obviously, St. Louis is a Cardinals town, and everything the Cardinals do, people talk about, and the Blues to a lesser extent. But I always think it when things happen with the Billikens, good or bad, it became so. Just as an example, I was picking up my daughter from kindergarten today, and I see her kindergarten, her elementary school principal, who's a great guy, love him. And anytime I see him, we generally end up talking sports for just a few minutes before he heads over to take care of carpool stuff, which elementary school principals have to do. And today, as we have our quick little, you know, minute long conversation, he brings up the Billikens game from last night. Like that was the top thing on the mind, and that was everywhere. Everybody was talking about it, both because the Billikens got a win, a really good win against VCU last night, 78-69, and they go to 6-2 in A-10 play, and they beat one of the teams that is a legitimate contender to win the A-10, like all those things. So that's really good. But then what's not really good but had people talking was what happens in the stands where there is a fight, like a full-fledged fight that takes place behind the VCU bench. So much so that they had to stop the game. They had to stop everything for about 5 minutes, and high-level athletics officials are in there trying to separate people, and they're secure. Like, that just doesn't happen. And SLU did issue a statement today saying that they are going to investigate it. There's been some rumblings out there that maybe there was some sort of conflict between parents of VCU players and some SLU fans, whether that might have been SLU fans directing something at VCU players and parents hearing it, or just SLU fans just saying things that fans say, but they were in the vicinity of parents of VCU players, so they hear it and they take offense to it. Like, it wasn't good. It was not good at all. And that's the bummer. This is where I'm torn as a sports radio host, because from a talking standpoint, I got stuff to talk about because there's a fight at the basketball game last night in the stands that was kind of crazy. So if my job, and it is, if my job is to sit here and you know, talk about the things that you're talking about and give opinions on it and get interaction and all that sort of stuff, then last night is great for that. However, I love St. Louis. I want to see Billikens basketball be incredibly successful. Our city has been dragged through the mud at times, especially from a sports perspective recently. Not from a sports perspective. A lot of times with it's self-inflicted wounds with leadership and other things in the community. Like, there's just a lot going on. And the last thing I want is on national TV there to be this fight that everybody looks at. I mean, people, the college basketball world was looking at it on Twitter last night as it's happening. And the last thing I want is people to say, oh, see, it's St. Louis. That's the stuff that happens in St. Louis. So that's the bummer of it all. We'll continue this conversation after the 7 o'clock news. Maria Keenan has that coming up in just a few minutes right here on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Into hour two of the program, and we've got a lot coming up. Our two major talking points today, talking Blues hockey and talking Billikens basketball. Lou Korak's going to join us in about 10 minutes or so, and we'll talk with him about everything going on with the Blues, including them receiving quite the gift of Brandon Saad agreeing to basically just cancel his contract and everything that goes along with it. It's going to save the Blues some money, both from just a saving money standpoint and also, I would argue, more importantly, from a salary cap perspective. And so he's going to join us in, like I said, 10 minutes or so. And then later on in the hour, Gibson Jimerson is going to join us after a huge Billikens victory last night. Let's talk about the win for a moment, because it means a lot. First off, puts them at 6-2 in A-10 play. And now they have a win against one of the teams that is considered one of the top teams in the league. So George Mason is at 6-1 in league play. They're a little bit better than I think a lot of people thought they were going to be. And then you've got VCU and SLU each sitting at 6-2 in the conference. So three teams are tied for first in the win column, and VCU and SLU are a half game back because they've got two losses, and we'll see where things go from there. So that's really good for SLU. Just now they have a win against one of the elite teams in the league. They split the series against VCU as well, so that's good. You didn't get swept in a series by one of the top teams. It continues to keep them on track to be one of the top seeds in the conference tournament. So those are all the good things that come out of it. And like we have said over and over and over again, this team only gets to the NCAA tournament if they win the conference tournament. And the best way to do that is to have the easiest path possible. Now, at the end of it, you're still going to be playing really good teams, but go get as easy of a path as possible. Have to, especially for, you know, if something's going to take this SLU team down, it's the lack of depth. It's how many minutes guys are playing. You get into the conference tournament, you're playing a bunch of games in a short amount of time. Like, that's something to be concerned about. And they'll have to figure that out. They'll see, you know, as the season goes along, you'll see if some people start to take a step forward. It's not where they want it to be, I don't think, in terms of their rotation. But at the same time, they're winning games. So that's all that really matters. Kellen Thames did not play at all yesterday. He's been dealing with some medical issues. Josh Schertz, after the game, kind of deferred comment to Thames, but making it clear in his comments about Thames as a guy that there's no off-court stuff going on of why he didn't play. It's a medical issue. So you hope that maybe you can get something out of him at some point, but at the same time, I don't know. Based off the way things were said yesterday, it's hard to really believe that there's going to be a positive outcome on that. So that's the game. And also, one other thing real quick. The equation that SLU used last night, I'm not breaking any news by saying this. Three things happened. They were better offensively. They weren't fantastic offensively, but they were better offensively. They had really, really been struggling from a shooting perspective for about four games leading into it, and they shot 48% yesterday. Not bad. 33% on three-point shots. You'd like it to be a little bit better. Although they held VCU to 16% on three-point shots. That leads to my second point. The defense yesterday was on point. Defense was so good. That's what they did last night. That if they can replicate some version of that very consistently, that's going to be their pathway to winning at a high level and going on more runs and being able to beat a lot of good teams. And then from a rebounding perspective, they were pretty good, especially in the second half. It is not a coincidence that they outscored VCU by 12 in the second half, 50-38, when they also out-rebounded them in the second half, 23-13. Those two things go hand in hand. So shoot better, and offense is always a variable. You know, the old basketball cliche about, you know, scoring can be a variable, but defense is your consistent. Well, be more closely to what you were offensively last night, if not better. Go play awesome defense like you did, and it kind of goes along with the defense, but go rebound the heck out of the basketball, and you're going to be in pretty good shape. Got a text message from the 314. Says, Matt, I'm a huge Billikens fan. I hope all the news from last night brings more awareness and fans to the arena. I hope the fight doesn't keep people away. I don't think it will. I don't think it will. This city wants to. This city so badly wants to root for a really good Billikens basketball team. And the West Pine Bills Twitter account, I think I got that right, they tweeted out a picture today of the seats that are available for Friday night. It's not a lot. Like, there's still seats available, but man, that looks like it's going to be an awesome crowd on Friday night when they welcome in Dayton. So that's good news. That's really, really good news. I don't think the fight last night is going to stop fans from showing up. I just hate the fact that last night was such a great basketball night for the Billikens, and we're stuck here talking about a fight that happens in the stands, which is dumb. That's the frustrating thing. All I want to do is just talk about how great they played last night and what this could mean for the team moving forward. Unfortunately, and if you were, you know, all the national Twitter accounts picked it up. I mean, everybody saw it. Very few people who saw it on Twitter had any clue what the win meant for the Billikens in beating VCU. And I hate the idea that it kind of goes along with the narrative of what the city of St. Louis in some ways has turned into. But I don't think that anybody's going to say, you know what? I got tickets to that Friday game, but I can't go because I'm worried there's going to be a fight in my section. Like, I don't think that's going to be a thing. I just don't. If the Billikens play great basketball, people are going to show up and Shea Fitz Arena is going to be absolutely filled up. We'll jump back to the Billikens when Gibson Jimerson joins us in about 20 minutes. But up next, we'll talk Blues hockey with Lou Korak. This is a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. Graybar Sports Open Line continues here on KMOX. A reminder for you, Gibson Jimerson from the St. Louis University men's basketball team. He is scheduled to join us in about 15 minutes. We've kind of been alternating back and forth, talking about the Billikens and their win last night and talking about the Blues and everything that's gone down over the last 24 hours or so. And we're very happy to welcome back onto the program. Covers the Blues for NHL.com. Also, you can read him at the Hockey News, covering the Blues there as well. He is Lou Korak. You follow him on Twitter at LKorak10. Lou, thanks for taking the time with us. How are you?
I'm good, Matt. How are you?
I'm good. Probably not as good as the Blues because they have to be quietly celebrating when they're able to get out from underneath of Brandon Saad's contract, not just for this year, but that salary cap hit goes away for next year as well.
Yeah, that's going to be an added bonus here. Obviously, something that going into the year, you didn't anticipate. You're thinking, you know, this is a veteran guy that's, you know, for the first 3 years, been a pretty steady, solid player for you. And, you know, when you're signing him for 5 years, you're anticipating you've got this year and next year at $4.5 million. And it's, let's be honest, you know, this is a guy that at the end of the year, when you're thinking, you know what? He wasn't nothing extraordinary, but then you take a look at his stats and go, 20 goals, 40, 50 points, right about what you expected him to be. But for whatever reason, it just didn't work out this year. The thing that astonishes me the most is he's played in 43 games and his 7 goals have come in 3 games.
Yeah.
That's crazy to think about. And I remember the last one obviously was January 3rd against Ottawa. And that first goal he scored, I don't think I can get that one out of my head because it was one of the prettier goals that I've seen scored this year. And the guy's still got ability. The guy can still play. But I'll tell you, when we were talking to Doug Armstrong yesterday and he outlined everything for us, that what their plans were of going on waivers, and if he clears, he's going down to Springfield after that. And the whole time I kept thinking, and I'm looking at him and I'm going, I don't see this guy going to Springfield. So this doesn't surprise me one bit what happened today. Obviously mutual, and good that, you know, that it didn't turn ugly or that it got ugly, because obviously, you know, a contract is a contract in the NHL, and Saad could have held the Blues and made them obligated to fulfill it. But both sides agreed to this because obviously the player still feels like he can play in the NHL. He doesn't want to uproot his family and have to go to Springfield, Massachusetts now as a 32-year-old and a guy that's been in the league a while. So an amicable split, and this is where we're at right now.
Also, where the team is at is the fact that they just – it's looked better under Jim Montgomery, but the results haven't been that much better, and we're hearing the same things about lack of energy and we're seeing slow starts. Why? Why can't this team? Is it just because of the personnel and the team's not good enough, or does it go deeper on why these issues that existed with Craig Berube coaching, existed with Drew Bannister coaching, are now continuing to exist with Jim Montgomery?
It's the million-dollar question, Matt, to be honest with you, and that's something that I asked Doug Armstrong yesterday. It's like, you know, this is a team that you're right there scratching and clawing for that second wild card, and yet here we are at the end of a 3-game homestand, lost all 3, and, you know, we've got players and coaches talking about energy being low, body language being negative, and how can that be? And to me, like you said, I just think it runs a little more deeper than this, and it got me thinking a little bit and just thinking about some of the things that Doug Armstrong said. You know, You've got a group here that should be leading by example. And I, you know, last year, and he made a good comparison. somebody like Braden Schenn maybe didn't have the kind of year that you expected or wanted to see him have last year, and then Robert Thomas and Pavel Buchnevich did. Well, now the roles have flipped. So you haven't had the guys that you're counting on to be in your top six all going at the same time. And to me, right now, you've got Thomas and you've got Buchnevich. And it's crazy when you think about Thomas, because I thought after he came back from the injury that forced him to miss the 12 games, he had a heck of a December, but January's been very inconsistent, and I just don't think Pavel Buchnevich has lived up to the standards that you expect to have from him. And when your best players aren't your best players, these are the results that you're going to have. And it just seems like 3 years running now, we're talking about the Blues potentially not making the playoffs, and a lot of the times the crux of it is that your best players haven't been your best players all the time, and if that's the case, you're not going to make the playoffs.
Will the club be forced to make some tough decisions in the offseason with some of those names that you just mentioned if they don't find some level of consistency, playoffs or not, just, you know, fixing some of those issues between now and the end of this year?
I think they're going to take a good, long, hard look at whether you're going to invest in some of the players that they initially felt like they were going to invest in. Let's just take, for example, Robert Thomas and Jordan Kyrou. Obviously, two players that they believed in at the time, believed that they wanted to invest in, wanted these guys to be a part of the long-term future. Well, these guys right now do not have any kind of protection with their contracts. But that all expires on July 1st. July 1st, these guys have full no-trade protection that kicks in. So I think they're going to take a good, long, hard look, not just at those two, but there's going to be other veterans on this team. You're going to have some guys now that actually have full no trade protection right now that's going to disappear come July 1st. So they're going to take a look at some of these guys and feel, and they're going to have to ask the hard question, can we win with these guys while we're grooming these prospects and getting the next wave and the next generation to blend in with these guys? Those are going to be some of the tough questions that they're going to have to ask. And there's going to be a number of them. It's not just those two guys that I mentioned to you. You're going to have some guys on that blue line as well that you're going to have to ask these hard questions of. And it's just basic. It sounds simple, but you have to answer the question with a yes or a no. You can't be in that middling middle as the Blues have been in the standings now for 3 years.
What is the frustration level right now for a Doug Armstrong?
I think he's frustrated, but not maybe to the point that some people may think. I think that they understand that this was a road that they knew they were going to have to go down at some point. I thought maybe this year that they thought that they were going to be able to take that next step and maybe be a playoff team again, because obviously he's made some moves. I mean, this goes back to the summer, you know, bringing in not necessarily household names where they're eye-popping and going, wow, these are going to be difference makers, but role players, complementary players that have experience in the league, like a Roddick Fox, Matthew Joseph. You took a chance on an Alexander Texier who's 25 years old, and they're going to get a good look at him the rest of this year to see what they have. He made an in-season trade that I thought was a very good one for Cam Fowler, and that to me was a reinforcement from a GM thinking, hey, I'm giving you some help here, now take it and run with it, and they haven't been able to do it. It's just the inconsistent. I think they're frustrated more than anything that this team is consistently inconsistent. Mm-hmm. And that's just the cycle that they're going to have to at some point break. They're not hitting the panic button yet. I think, and I don't want to say that it would have been a panic button move if he would have came out yesterday and said, yeah, we're going to bring up Dvorsky. Yeah, we're going to bring up some of these young guys from Springfield and just let them go. But if they continue down this road and it gets to a point, you know, where you're looking at 20, 25 games left in the season, you know, 15 games or whatever it is, you might as well bring some of these young guys up, give them a taste of the life here, let them get acclimated a little bit and kind of give them a little bit of a head start as they start their careers moving forward.
Blues back at it. They've got one against Colorado coming up on Friday night. Luke Korak does an amazing job covering the Blues. You read him at NHL.com. He's the Blues site editor over at the Hockey News as well. Follow him on Twitter at LKorak10. Lou, we always appreciate you taking time for us. Thanks so much, and we'll talk to you again real soon.
All right, man. Take care.
Very good. Luke Korak joining us here on the program. Appreciate him taking a few moments with us. Good on Doug Armstrong for not being frustrated. I would be incredibly frustrated. I think fans are frustrated. Not to a point where I don't think it's not to the level of Cardinals fans' frustration. They're not, you know, leaving Enterprise Center half empty or anything like that. But, man, the worst thing, and this is sports, this is life, this is whatever. The worst thing is when you have hope, like legit hope, and then it's kind of pulled out from underneath you. And in many ways, think about how you felt about this team following those back-to-back wins against the Calgary Flames, where they get within 1 point of a playoff spot. And even after that, they go lose at Utah, but come back with a win against Vegas. And you still feel like, so at that point, they had won four of five of seven. Just, it feels like they're on a run. It feels like they're going to go do something. And then they come home for a three-game homestand, and they play three games where they lose all three games by multiple goals, 4-2, 2-0, 5-2. And you go from being a point out of a playoff spot to being, you know, 5 points out of a playoff spot. And it is incredibly frustrating because this team keeps giving you hope, and then that hope keeps going away. And we've discussed it a lot here recently about the work that it's going to take to make up, you know, even 3 points in the standings. And all of a sudden, they're now 5 points back of Calgary, and they're just barely in front of Utah. It's not a good position for this team to be in right now by any stretch of the mind. We are going to take a break, and when we return, we're going to be joined by St. Louis University men's basketball player Gibson Jimerson, all-time points leader in the program. He had a big night for sure last night as he scores 26 points, helping the Billikens to a big win against VCU, 78-69. That was something to see last night. Gibson Jimerson joins us coming up in just a moment here on a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. It's a Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauly, continuing to take you through the program. Last night, what a win for the Billikens. They knock off VCU by a 78-69 score with the win. SLU is now sitting with a 6-2 record in Atlantic 10 play, even with VCU, and they've got another big game coming up on Friday night when they're going to match up against Dayton. Big game yesterday for Gibson Jimerson. He scores 26 points to lead the way, and we're very happy to welcome him onto the program right now. Gibson, thanks so much for taking some time with us today. How are you?
I'm doing well, man. Appreciate it. Yeah, I'm glad to be on. It was definitely a fun one last night. You know, anytime you can get a win like that, you know, on your home court with the fans and everything, it's always a good time. So yeah, it was fun.
What does it say about your team in the sense that when you went to VCU a couple weeks ago, it did not look like that, and then a lot of improvement really in just 2 weeks, and you were able to come up with a win like that last night?
Yeah, I think it just shows that we're a resilient group. You know, we can kind of learn from previous games. And you're right. Like, you know, we went down there and, you know, we kind of got punched in the mouth a little bit. And we kind of learned that, you know, in order to beat a team like that, you have to be extremely physical. You have to be locked into the details. And I think we were both of those things last night. You know, we didn't shoot the ball great, but, you know, we relied on our defense. We rebounded and, you know, we made enough plays down the stretch to get a win.
Yeah, you mentioned the rebounding. In the second half, you guys out-rebound VCU 23-13. You end up just narrowly beating them in the rebounding edge, 37-36. Can you speak to the impact? Because, I mean, you outscored them 50-38 in the second half. How much of that did have to do with how well you guys rebounded in the second half?
Yeah, I mean, we knew from the first game and just kind of, you know, who they are as a team. You know, they go to the offensive glass, everybody on their team crashes. So we knew we had to be physical, box out. And, you know, I think there were a couple bad bounces that went their way. But for the most part, I thought we did a good job of hitting bodies. You know, we knew that, you know, if we were going to, you know, give them, I think they shot 35 more shots than us in the first game. If we're going to do that and also, you know, have some turnovers, like it was going to be mathematically impossible for us to win. But, you know, we put bodies, like you said, in the second half, we were cracking and, you know, we were able to get those rebounds. And I thought that was able to allow us to get out in transition and score a lot of easy baskets, which in a game like that is what you need.
Yeah, team shoots 47%. The shooting here recently hasn't been great, but it was a little bit better last night. When you're going through periods where maybe you're not making as many baskets as you would like, is it something that even for you personally, is it something that you just kind of know is going to come back around at some point? Is it something that's talked about, worked on? Like, because last night it was a pretty solid offensive night for you guys.
Yeah, I think, you know, for us, it's all about the process of it. Like if our offensive process is good, if we're getting good looks, you know, we're confident that they'll go in. And, you know, some nights it don't. And that's where, you know, like kind of like in the past few games, you got to hang your hat on the defensive end. That's what travels. And for us, you know, we got to be able to win games where we're not shooting well, and games that we are, you know, still defend. But, you know, we'll have a, you know, those games will be, you know, we'll have a, you know, a lot of points. But, you know, for us, it's on the defensive end, you know, staying locked in and making sure our offensive process is good. That's all you can really ask for, you know, making shots, missing shots, that comes and goes. And, you know, for us, you know, we're confident in who we are, and even myself, like, and I'm never going to let misses affect, you know, if I'm going to shoot it or not. I'm confident in the work I've put in. But, you know, for us, just hanging our hat on that defensive end is what's been huge for us.
Kobe Johnson last night matches his career high of 19 points. What did you see from him?
Yeah, he was awesome, man. He was everywhere. Started, you know, set the tone early, you know, made a three, had a couple nice, you know, drives, super physical, you know, elite defense last night. Yeah, I love him. You know, he's a great guy, and, you know, he kind of set that tone for us in the game. And, you know, when he's turned up like that, even as well as Kalu was, you know, we need those guys to come out and be aggressive, you know, kind of take a little bit of that load off of us. And, you know, Kobe was awesome last night. He was everywhere. And yeah, it was just a big time performance from him.
We're talking with Gibson Jimerson after SLU got a huge win against VCU last night. So much talk about Robbie Avila and everything that he does, and he fills up the box score every night. What does he do in a game that makes his teammates, people like you, better? How does he help everybody else?
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously first is the attention that he draws. You know, obviously he's going to be, you know, top of the scouting report for us just because of, you know, his scoring, his passing, and his you know, just his IQ. You know, he allows us to play a certain way. You know, he's kind of the hub of the offense. He gets everybody involved. And, you know, last night, you know, he didn't, you know, started off kind of slow, but, you know, as the game went on, he kind of wore them down a little bit, was able to get mismatches, kick the ball out. He's always going to make the right play. And, you know, for him, I think it's just been huge, and it's allowed, you know, myself, Swope, and the other guys, like we get, you know, a lot of space from just him being on the court. And yeah, he's extremely important to what we're doing. And, you know, he's also a confident guy. You know, he's not going to let a couple turnovers or missed shots affect him, but yeah, you know, him playing his game is what we need.
When Shea Fitz Arena is loud, when it's filled up, it literally is one of the best college basketball environments you're going to see. Looks like it should be close to that on Friday. Good crowd last night as well. Can you speak to the impact that the fans had on that game last night?
Yeah, it was huge, and it was from the jump, and it was big time. The student section was awesome. You know, they were really into it. It was, you know, sometimes it was hard for us to kind of hear what was going on as well, but you know, every time we made a big shot or got a big stop, you know, they were there for us. So yeah, it's huge. And, you know, Friday, you know, I hope it's the same, if not better, you know, with a good Dayton team coming in. So yeah, man, when it's packed like that, it's rocking. It's a hard place to win, you know, for road teams. So, you know, we need that throughout the rest of the year. Cause that's definitely a huge advantage for us.
You're in a really unique spot as a returner. You've got all these new teammates, you got new coaches, you've been around for a while. What has this year and this experience been like for you? Whereas a guy who's a little bit older than most of the other guys, but you're sitting there in a new system and a new coach and doing everything new, like many of the other players.
Yeah, I think it was a little bit of kind of a breath of fresh air. I think a little bit of a reset as well. You know, obviously playing for Ford for 5 years, and you kind of got used to how we did things. And I think, you know, now it kind of got a little bit of that reset. Had to learn, you know, kind of a new system, you know, new ways of playing defense. Obviously personnel has been a huge change. So I think for me, just kind of attacking it as a new challenge, and, you know, really embracing kind of what Shirts wants to do, what a lot of the guys on my team do. And, you know, I've really enjoyed it. It's been fun. You know, it hasn't been, you know, like a linear, you know, easy path, but you know, for me, it's been a fun challenge. And obviously I think you're seeing that now with our group and myself, like we're all starting to click kind of at the right time. But man, I've enjoyed it. It's been fun, you know, kind of what I was hoping for in my last season at SLU.
I got to ask you, last night, unfortunately, one of the big focuses on the game is what happened in the stands. There was a bit of a fight or a scuffle. It actually delayed the game for about 5 minutes. What in the world are you thinking as all of that is going on? It's very rare for something in the stands to impact something going on the floor.
Yeah, no, that's the first time that's happened in my career. Yeah, it was weird. Like, I think, you know, we were huddled up in a timeout, and obviously end of the game, you know, they were kind of making a little bit of a, not really a comeback, but they had made it, you know, a shot, I think. But honestly, I saw it happening, and then, you know, I was just trying to stay as focused as I could on what we were doing. We were drawing up an inbounds play to get the ball in, obviously critical part of the game. But it's hard in those scenarios when something like that's happening. And, you know, obviously for them, it was in front of their bench, so it was even more so of probably a distraction. But, you know, for us and for myself, I think it was just focusing on what we were doing. We ended up going and sitting down on the bench and just trying to, you know, not pay attention to that. Let you know, security and everybody handle that. But yeah, it was interesting.
Yeah, for sure. A big game coming up on Friday. Huge week on VCU, Dayton, back to back at home. I know you guys probably haven't really been able to jump in on Dayton too much quite yet. But as you look to this game coming up on Friday, how big of a game is this? What are the keys? What are your thoughts going into another big opportunity?
Yeah, like you said, it's a huge week for us. Two great, you know, home games. Obviously, with Dayton, it's going to be kind of a rivalry game. You know, we get them twice every year, once here, once there. So I'm super excited. I think we're going to get their best shot. You know, and that's what we want. We want to be tested like that. We want to, you know, go through that as a team. And, you know, for us, I think it's just, you know, focusing on the details like we've been locked in the scouting report. And like you said, you know, we haven't talked about them yet. We'll do that later today. We'll kind of get into personnel and what they do. But, you know, for us, I think it's, you know, locking into that, but also focusing on ourselves, you know, kind of controlling what we can control. And we'll have two great days of preparation, and we'll be ready for their best shot, you know, Friday night. But yeah, it's going to be a big time game, fun environment. I can't wait.
Gibson Jimerson, he is the Billikens' all-time leader in points and three-pointers made. Helps lead SLU to a huge win against VCU yesterday. They've got Dayton coming up on Friday night. You'll be able to hear it right here on KMOX. There are some tickets that are still available for a 6 o'clock tip, on Friday night at Shea Fitz Arena. Gibson, thanks so much for taking the time with us. Best of luck on Friday and the rest of the season. Hopefully we can catch up with you again down the line.
Appreciate it, man. Yep, great to be on. I really enjoyed it, man. Thank you.
That's Gibson Jimerson. Again, he had a big game yesterday, 26 points as he continues to add on to that record that he has with the Billikens, and they've got another big one coming up on Friday. They're going to match up against Dayton as the Billikens try to stay atop the Atlantic 10 standings. We'll take a break. We'll come back, and we'll wrap up this edition of the program. It's a Graybar Sports Open Line. More in just a moment right here on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Back at it here on a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauley. We are starting to wrap things up for the evening. Up next, we've got the Gas House Gang, our Wednesday night edition, which means you get more of me, but you also get some Tom Ackerman. It's going to be myself and Tom. We've got a lot to get to from 8 o'clock to 9 o'clock this evening, so that'll get started just after the 8 o'clock news. And, of course, just a reminder for you, we record that, or we perform it live at 12 noon each day. It's not just a recording that we play back later. It's a video show that you can take part in every day by hopping on the KMOX Sports social media channels, whether that's YouTube. That's a really good way to watch it. You can even subscribe to the KMOX Sports account, and then you can get notifications when we're starting the show, and you can comment there, and we see everything. But you can also watch it on the other social media channels as well, whether it's Twitter or Facebook, whatever it might be. But I always enjoy being able to play that back for you each night. But if you're looking for something to do at 12 noon each day, the Gas House Gang, we are there for you. So make sure to check that out. Couple quick baseball things before we do call it a day. Former Cardinal Johan Oviedo, he became the first player in this year's offseason to get an arbitration decision, and it does not go in his direction. As most of these, I've always believed that
the system is rigged against the players. Now, this is a this was actually a substantial difference. I always get frustrated when you go to arbitration over a small number, like the whole thing that's going on right now with Andre Pallante being separated by just $150,000. I continue to be hopeful that they don't walk into a room and go through an arbitration hearing over $150,000. For Oviedo, is actually a somewhat legitimate notable difference between what he went in for and what the team offered. He had put in a salary request for $1.15 million. The Pirates wanted to pay him $850,000, and the Pirates won the decision. So he's going to make $850,000 this upcoming season. Last year was 9-14, 4.32 ERA, 32 starts. He got a raise, but for you or me, this would be a substantial raise for a baseball player. It's not. He went from making $765,000 last year to making $850,000. So a raise of less than $100,000 for Oviedo. And it's just, as a player, the odds are stacked against you. You go to these things, and the owners are always going to win a higher percentage than the players. A couple other things happened that when we talk about the NL Central, and I am of the belief that the division is wide open, wide open. Right now, who's the best team on paper? It's probably the Chicago Cubs, probably, but that doesn't really mean that much, and they certainly have not improved themselves the way that I expected them to improve themselves. If you would have told me that the Tucker move and the Presley move was kind of going to be the two big things that they do here towards the end of free agency, and this is where they'd be right now, I probably would have thought the opposite of that. I really thought that they were going to be a team that would make more of a splash. So they're probably the best team in the division right now, but it's not an overwhelming difference. They certainly don't have a clamp on winning the division this upcoming season. The Brewers are the Brewers. They lost some people for sure. Willie Adames isn't there anymore. Devin Williams isn't there anymore. On paper, it looks like they're ready to take a step back. But last year on paper, it looked like they were ready to take a step back. This is the annual rite of tradition when it comes to the NL Central. Look at the Brewers roster, discount who they're going to be, and then watch them go win the division. I don't think that's going to happen this year, but I didn't think it was going to happen last year. All I can do is look at who they are as a team and evaluate that. And I'll say this same stuff every single year, that they're probably going to do what they always do. But on paper, they don't look like they should be a division-winning team. I've said over and over that I think the Cincinnati Reds might be the most talented team in the division. A lot of it is young talent. A lot of it is unproven talent. I don't think that they are the best team in the division. Sometimes being the most talented team and being the best team are very different things. And one of the questions I've had is, if a Terry Francona walks into the Cincinnati Reds, he doesn't do that without some level of assurance that they are going to do things to be good. And they've made a couple small moves, very small moves, but moves that could end up being a big deal. They acquire relief pitcher Taylor Rogers in a trade with the San Francisco Giants. They send back a minor league reliever. As Jeff Passan from ESPN wrote about this, he said, continuing additions and hopes of contending in the National League Central under new manager Terry Francona. They also made a minor league deal for a former Brewers pitcher in Wade Miley. Miley is recovering from elbow surgery, so you don't know what that's going to look like for him. He missed most of last season with the Brewers. He's expected to return at some point in 2025. This will be his second stint with the Reds, having played for them in 2020 and also 2021. So we've seen Wade Miley. He can be a nice piece. He can be a solid starter. He's coming off an elbow surgery and won't even have a full spring training. So there's a very large question mark when it comes to him. But maybe, just maybe, we should be talking more about the Cincinnati Reds and these small little incremental type things that they are doing to try to make themselves better. I'll say it again. Terry Francona doesn't walk into that door unless he feels like that organization is ready to make some moves to make sure that if it that put them in position to possibly contend, and if they are contending, do some more things. So the only team, and I like the Pirates. I think the Pirates have some good young pieces for sure. The only team that I really don't feel like has much of a chance at all of contending in the division is the Pirates. And from a Vegas standpoint, the Pirates and Cardinals essentially have the same odds to win the Central. So maybe I'm giving the Cardinals a little bit too much credit. And obviously I'm in St. Louis and I see what they're going through. And I just feel like there's an opportunity for the Cardinals to be a lot better than people expect them to be. I could be wrong. I could be wrong on that for sure. But we talk a lot about the Cubs. We talk a lot, obviously, about the Brewers. Some folks talk about the Cardinals. Maybe we should be spending some more time talking about the Reds because they keep doing things, and they're doing small things. And the Cardinals have yet to do much of anything this offseason. They haven't spent a dollar in Major League free agency quite yet. That's going to change at some point in the next week and a half. I would be beyond shocked. If I am doing my first show from Jupiter, Florida, and the roster looks exactly like it looks right now, my level of shock will be pretty darn high because I 100% expect them to at the very least bring in a relief pitcher that they feel like that they can use in leverage spots. And they've talked about a right-handed bat. We'll see whether or not that comes to fruition. But absolutely, the bullpen being addressed at least a little bit with some with a veteran being infused in there, I'm pretty sure that's going to happen before pitchers and catchers report. But every minute that goes by, every second that ticks by, we are closer and closer to that report date, and the chances of me being incorrect in that assessment start to go up and up and up. I'm also of the belief that Nolan Arenado is likely to be traded before we get to camp as well. However, the only thing I would say on that is if Bregman ends up signing with the Red Sox, I think there's at that point, I might say that there's, at the very least, it's a 50-50 shot that he comes to camp with the Cardinals. But if Bregman ends up somewhere, if he goes to Houston, I just think that Boston thing is going to end up playing out. And Boston still wants Bregman, and they've probably got, of all those teams, they probably have the ability. They may not have the stomach for it, but they probably have the ability to go more years and more money per year than these other teams that are in pursuit of Bregman. That's it for this edition of Graybar Sports Open. What a show. What a fun show that we had today. Thanks to Gibson Jimerson who joined us just a few minutes ago. Thanks to Isaac Bruce who joined us in the first hour. Bernie Miklas was with us. Luke Korak was with us. This was an awesome show. If you missed any of it, you can always go back to the Sports Open Line podcast there at KMOX.com on the Odyssey app, and you can listen back to anything that you would like to listen back to. The Gas House Gang with myself and Tom Ackerman on the way next. And tomorrow it's the Countdown to Opening Day show. Mike Claiborne and myself will have you an extended conversation with Randy Flores. We're going to talk with Jimmy Crooks. We've got some other things up our sleeves as well. So that's coming up tomorrow from 6 to 8. Talk to you then here on KMOX.